We have a student panel coming up, and to moderate that this evening is Chet Agnew. He's the chair of the College Democrats at UW-Madison and a member of the Student Action Labor Action Coalition, or SLAC, a member of All Minds Matter, an intern with Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. He studies biology, political science, and global health. He plans to work on public health policy and in advocacy after he graduates. And he has been great to work with during the planning process of this teach-in. And we are very, very happy to have him introduce our panel for this evening.
Hello. Welcome to the next. Can you hear me at all?
Is this what I think?
Yeah. Okay, I just want you to use the mic then. Welcome. Thank you all for coming. I think we are going to just get started with our panel. If we could have our panelists please come join us at the dais. We have Danny and, how did you pronounce your name?
Kaya.
And Tyreek Mack could not be with us tonight, but we have Kenneth Cole taking his place on the panel. You should give a round of applause for our panel. I'm just going to read some bios of the panelists. So first, Danny Lewandowski. Danny uses he, him, his pronouns. He's a junior at UW-Madison, double majoring in history and political science with a certificate in LGBT studies. He's been involved with College Democrats his entire college career. I work with him really closely on an executive board. As an LGBT caucus director for College Democrats of Wisconsin, he has been able to support LGBTQ students throughout the state by helping stop anti-LGBTQ legislation like AB 469. Which was a trans-exclusionary bill dealing with bathrooms in schools. He's also a working class student and a member of the Student Labor Action Coalition, who is working to secure a living wage and fair treatment for all campus employees. Next we have Kaya Rabani. Kaya is a graduate student in the Environment and Resources and uses she, her, hers pronouns. Her activism has focused mainly on four areas: democracy, labor, higher education, and the climate crisis. Among other things that have distracted her from her dissertation, she served as the Teaching Assistants Association, or TAA, co-president, led the first effort in the country to place a referendum on the ballot calling for a constitutional amendment to undo the Citizens United decision from the Supreme Court. And trained over 130 people in nonviolent civil disobedience to resist the Keystone XL pipeline.
Yes.
And then finally, we have Kenneth Cole. Kenneth is a sociology and legal studies major whose gender pronouns are he, him, his. Kenneth is an extremely involved individual in multiple communities on campus. He serves as an active member in his fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha, the first intercollegiate Black Greek letter organization, as well as in his involvement as a leader in the UW Black Out movement. He is also a leader in the Blindside ASM organization, Slate, which is, just for some background, it's an organization that's trying to run several campaigns to get students of color and other marginalized students on ASM, which is our student government body, in order to reallocate funds and make sure those decisions being made for students represent communities that aren't represented normally. His active approach to bettering his community on issues of race, diversity, inclusion, and inequality can be shown in his many campus endeavors. Kenneth Cole is also a proud Posse Scholar from Los Angeles. Great, can we have another round of applause? Great, so for our first question, as you have heard, these students have done a lot of work both on and off campus. Beyond being students, all three of you have been very active in many different campaigns and movements. Can you explain the types of movements you have been involved in and the work you have done, or give any other important information on yourself that wasn't in your introduction? And we'll start with Kaya and go down the line.
Oh, it starts with me. Okay, great. I mean, that's a pretty broad question. I guess I'll just say that I've had my hands in a bunch of different areas since coming to Madison, and I'm just looking at Rebecca. I met Rebecca in the constitutional amendment resolution campaign a number of years back, and some wonderful people here. But I guess what I'd say about myself is just that I am a strong believer in working across artificial boundaries of different kinds, whether those be disciplinary boundaries in academic disciplines or they be socially constructed boundaries in society. I think we're stronger together, and I'm really excited about this teach-in because I think that it's sorely needed to come together and figure out how you can work together more effectively to get the kind of big change we really do need in society.
Could we also speak up on the panel? Thank you.
Sorry.
Yes.
Are those mics?
Those are mics.
Yes, move them a little bit toward you.
If you move it closer to you, it should be able to pick up your voice.
You 1, 2, 3, testing. Can people hear us?
No.
We were on earlier.
Hello.
Do you want to try again?
Hello. Good. Okay.
I don't know if yours is on. It says push here. Mine's just brighter than yours.
Yeah,
I looked at mine. It's really bright. It's
it gets a little dimmer as it goes down.
I would say my level of involvement with the community of Madison and the campus community has kind of stemmed from my involvement with the multicultural community at UW-Madison, first joining a Black League-led organization whose mission and purpose is to serve downtrodden and underrepresented communities, and that being wherever you are. So kind of with my work in my fraternity, and then moving on as a upperclassman, kind of trying to find ways to get more involved on campus, we were able to gather a lot of support around the issues that were going on at the University of Missouri, especially as they related to the racial diversity and equality issues that we have here on campus. And kind of getting people involved in that was how we were able to sprout the Blackout Movement, which is a movement where we simply serve to represent underserved communities on campus. And that may be underserved brown and black communities, or the underserved community of women who undergo a lot of issues of sexual assault on campus, underserved political issues such as the need for clean energy and things of that matter, and just getting people socially aware. We pride ourselves in raising consciousness in our communities and actually mobilizing and activating people in political action in order to try to make our voices heard as people who are often downtrodden and undermined. Another big campaign that we're working on right now that was mentioned in the introduction is our ASM campaign called The Blind Side, where we have about 23 candidates that we're running to try to fill about 29 seats. And if we can do that, then we can cause a lot of institutional power shift in the hands of those who have not historically been served at this university. So a lot of that is involved with the university right now. And another thing that we're working on that is more community-based that the Blackout has had the privilege to be a part of organizing is the March for Tony Robinson and Justice in the Community tomorrow. We were in charge and responsible for gathering student organizations that can be involved in helping get out the word and reaching out to their constituency, as well as reaching out to people who will be potentially performing, whether that be spoken word, whether that be speeches, or whether that be some type of community uplift for the event and for the community in general. And it's been a great experience to be able to be a part of all of those things.
Also, Kenneth is actually a part of the slate, so any students out there should vote for him for the ASM elections. Yeah. Just saying. My name is Danny, as Chad mentioned. I am a working class student, as well as I identify as pansexual. So those two identifiers in my life have really... they've really impacted me a lot, and they impacted me, I think, even more so when I came to college. Coming into UW-Madison, I was able to explore who I was a lot more so than my hometown. I'm actually from the same town as Cassie, and she could probably attest to it just as much as I can that, you know, growing up in a small town in Wisconsin, it's pretty stifling. You don't really get a chance to explore who you are, and you're pretty much, from the moment you're born on, you're told who you're supposed to be. Coming to UW-Madison, like I said, I was really able to explore myself, and you know, I was really able to delve into my identities as both working class and pansexual. I am now the LGBTQ caucus director for the College Democrats of Wisconsin, our statewide organization. As far as my memory serves me, I'm the first fluid sexual person to serve on the position. It's been a traditionally monosexual role in the past. I've recently been able to get more involved with the Student Labor Action Coalition following a lot of mistreatment that I've received in my time on as a campus worker. I'm a student supervisor at Gordon Dining Event Center, the largest dining center that we have at UW-Madison. And also the mistreatment of other workers as well, and the stories I've been able to hear. It's really spurred us to be able to start doing some really good work. I'm really excited about everything that we've been able to work on so far for advocating for student workers. We were able to collect stories last semester, just different experiences of a lot of different student workers, and a lot of them are really negative, and I think it's time that people start to hear those stories. And I'm excited for the work that's ahead of us. And if anybody wants to get more involved, obviously, feel free to reach out to me at any time after the panel. Yeah, definitely.
Great. For our next question, you all work on a huge range of different issues and fight for these different issues, but I think it's interesting for everyone else in the audience and myself to know, which issue do you believe is the most pressing issue that you work on, and how do you believe all these issues are sort of interconnected? And we'll start with Kenneth for this one.
I think the issue that we have a whole variety of undermined and underrepresented perspectives, be that in the U.S. and Wisconsin as a whole, is our biggest issue. Simply in as much insofar as the cause of that issue is corporate interest and an elite perspective that would rather undermine those perspectives for their own monetary gain. And I think that being the overarching issue serves to all of the different issues of racial inequality or economic inequality or the fact that as we heard in the beautiful songs of the Raging Grannies, the fact that we have a lot of issues regarding climate change and all different other types of environmental issues that we don't address simply because it's more beneficial for corporate interests and the elites in America to profit off of not having to be held accountable for their responsibility in helping us change those issues. So I think when we look at all of those issues, there is an interconnection, because the reason why we have economic disparity is because it more so benefits elites to not have to share some of the wealth and not have wealth income inequality. The reason why we have super industrialized prison systems is because they can make money off of having people in jail making 40 cents an hour and not getting paid what you should be paid for a living wage, even if you are in jail. To even think about what it means to have an industrialized prison system means that we as America have a stake in having more people in our prison system, which relates to criminal justice inequality. The fact that, for small marijuana offenses, people can be locked up for years at a time. And now we have a booming marijuana economy in places like Colorado, California, and Seattle, where you have, legalized marijuana recreationally and legalized marijuana medically. And we have 98% white men owning those companies, making money off of the same drug that a high percentage of black males have been disproportionately locked up for. And so when we look at all of those issues and all of those situations, there's one thing that connects them all. It's money and it's elite greed. Those are the same decisions that impact the decision of Capital One that the granny so eloquently sang about, and all other issues that kind of speak to underheard perspectives and minority perspectives that we would like to change, but that the rich and the elite have a stake in making sure the message of those changes and the message of those inequalities don't get out.
I'm going to try to put this without echoing too much of what Kenneth already said. I think when we look at it, this corporate greed the marginalization of power in the hands of the very few, I look at who it affects directly, who it affects first, and that's, you know, the employees of these big corporate giants, these large industrial complexes. We're looking at a vast majority of the U.S. population making not enough to survive. Federal minimum wage that has been raised since 2009, $7.25 an hour. You hear it across the United States. It's not enough to cut it. We need a living wage. I think the idea of a living wage of $15 an hour, it affects so much more than just workers directly, because you have to start looking at who are the people that are making $7.25 an hour. It's marginalized groups. It's underrepresented groups. Once we start fixing these problems and once we start drastically changing the economics of America and the political system of America, that's when we're going to start seeing real changes being made for all different types of groups. It really starts taking it to those in power, and then it starts with it starts with a $15 minimum wage, because right there, if you take away their ability to suppress working class people, that's the first thing. You hurt their pockets, and we can start loosening their grip and their control on our political system. So I think right there, that's number one.
Okay.
So I think part of the question was, what is your biggest, the biggest issue?
Or like your most pressing issue?
What you think
that
is
you're
the most pressing?
Passionate about.
Okay. So I'm gonna take the easier part of that question, which is what is your number two? that one I think is a little easier to answer. The number two issue I would say is a structural one that prevents us from achieving the other kinds of change that we really need. And we already heard the Raging Grannies sing about it quite a lot. That would be money and politics and the whole system, the way that the system is built to serve certain powerful interests at the expense of the many. And that is, I think, what also Kenneth and Annie were referring to. So I would say that's a number two issue, but whatever your number one is, I would encourage folks to make that your number two, because that way we can actually move forward in the other things that we really care about. In terms of the number one for me, I don't want to speak for what should be your number one issue, but personally, I guess the way that I look at it is there are some issues that are like an existential threat, and specifically there's really two in my mind, which is climate change is one of them, nuclear weapons are another one. The other things, though, that matter in society and the reasons that we care about those things are also very important, whether that be the ability of different groups to claim their rightful place in the public dialogue, or whether it be your basic rights as human beings to water and food and all the rest. Those things are incredibly important, too. And I think everything is really connected, which is the other part of what I think you asked. and so it's super important that we have people working on all of those areas and not just focusing on the most important. But I can say in my own life, at this point in time anyway, I'm trying to put a lot of my effort towards the climate piece. And that does involve aspects of environmental justice and other social components, too. It's not just a matter of emissions and policy. It's about people as well. And other creatures as well. So I guess that would be my answer to that. I would also say that on the matter of being connected and interconnected, that there is another, piece of that that I would say that almost number three, but a very important part of our work as activists and in trying to bring about change is our connection to each other in general. And one reason that is so important is because of the way that human values seem to actually work. And by values, I mean guiding principles that people use to make decisions in their lives, things that span many different situations. And there's been various research on this, and it turns out there are a lot of basic values you can plot on two dimensions and kind of make a circle. So you have one dimension that goes from individual kind of focus, things focused on the individual person, to collective. And then there's another dimension as well that depends on what model you're using can vary. But the important thing is that things on the opposite side of the circle that kind of fall out on different sides actually seem to inhibit each other. So to make this a little more concrete, money and power and trying to actually have power over other people, if you end up prioritizing that, it actually inhibits the kind of community feeling and trying to care for each other. And vice versa, if you strengthen the sense of caring and you build those bridges and you make it so that people know each other and they care about each other, you're going to weaken that individualistic tendency. And that individualistic tendency is something that I think at this point our society has gotten so hung up on and so focused on. We're all individuals, all acting individually, independently, autonomously, with government just kind of playing this role that's out there as government having a limited role that's basically there to just keep the system going as opposed to actually serving people and actually helping people connect. I think that part of how we get in to break that is to start really building connections as a primary part of what we do, because that's going to help. If it's the environmental movement and we're working on building connections, and you know, other groups that are working in other areas are building connections, that we help each other out. Because when I, you know, if I succeed in having somebody feel more connected to the natural environment, they're also going to, you know, just by the way that our brains work or our minds work, we'll also feel more connected to people and all. It really is very interconnected, a lot more than I think a lot of us realize. And until we start to stop to think about it, then you can really start to see those connections. But a lot of times it's easy to kind of say, okay, my issue silo, yours is over there, I'm just going to keep doing this and you do that, and we won't really connect. So I think this kind of coming together and getting to know each other across lines is really important.
For our next question, we've all talked about the system we have and a lot of its problems regarding money and power and all these things that are causing our system to not really work for everyone. So when you hear next system, what comes to mind? What do you see as the next system? And we'll start with Danny and then go to Kaya.
I think we really touched on a big issue, a big idea of what the next system is going to look like, and that's that interconnectedness that we were just talking about. There's a big saying amongst activists. Nobody is free until we're all free, and I think that is a big thing that we have to keep in mind when working on all of our individual campaigns. Is that like we were saying, we need to be able to help each other. We need to break down those barriers. We need to start understanding that our struggles affect other struggles, and that other people's struggles affect ours as well. And in that next system that we're looking at, I think we're going to see that interconnectedness really present itself in our world and in our communities. If we're able to take away power from those at the top, and the tight control that they have on it, and bring it down to the masses, either be it political power or means of production or what have you, whatever you see the next system being in your own mind. I think the overarching idea really is that it's going to be a world where everybody's interconnected and everybody is looking to help each other, and we're going to be a much better world because of it.
The next system. Well, I guess I would say that to figure out what the next system should be, or kind of as I think about that, I guess there's different parts of it for me. Part of it's about understanding or trying to understand what the system is now, and we've already talked a bit about that. But I feel like you need to, on some level, understand the situation we're in now in order to have a vision and a strategy to get to that vision. So I guess it's in part visualizing that next system, understanding the system we're in, and then seeing the path between them. And I do think I would echo what Danny just said, that to me, the next system, I would hope anyway, I hope, it could be, there could be many next systems, but my hope is that it'll be a better next system, and I would think that would be a system where we are more connected. We remember the value of community, we remember other things that motivate people that are not just that, money, physical wealth, things like that, power, but that there are a lot of ways of building society and making a better world, and that those things are within our reach. And I think also, just back to the matter of individualism, in today's system, at least in the American, in this society we live in here, there is what I feel like is a hyper-focus on individuals. Whether it's celebrities and all their goings on in their life, or it's the idea of the rugged individualist, the entrepreneur, whatever it is. Individual effort is very important and individual achievement is very important, but at the same time, sometimes that focus obscures the other things that can actually make individual people successful as well as society successful. And I would hope that as we move to build a better world, we stop looking for that individual hero so much that's coming out of this idea of individualism and start seeing ourselves as all heroes in the story of social change and in the story of building the society we all want to live in. So I think that would be part of it, is the shift from quite so much focus on the individual to more of a collective, although there is some value in certainly having some of that individual focus remain. I'm not saying that we should all erase our identities and move to total, just, you know, this totally collective thing, but I think having more of a balance, because I think things are out of balance now. So my hope is that we'll get to somewhere more balanced, hopefully, in the relatively near future. So it's worth working towards anyway.
I would say that I have a few different core political, social, and philosophical beliefs that I would believe would serve to help govern what a next system would look like. And these are in the actual idealistic truth of the values that those beliefs have. And those beliefs include equality, liberty, democracy, and education. I believe that those are key in human liberation and for humanity to be best served for the growth, flourishing, and sustainability of us as a people, as a culture, and as a being, as living beings. I think there's a lot to what's been said about the individualistic culture that we have. We often see things through our own perspective without the idea that there are other people living and trying to sustain around us, and that we have a stake in their existence just as people, in everybody's existence for that matter. We even have an individualistic perspective when it comes to the stake of our own movements, as has been said. For example, people in black liberation movements always see it as this is for black liberation, but without connecting that to the ultimate human liberation, you fall short of the ultimate idea that we as humans all deserve equality. We all deserve liberty. We all deserve the right to choose, the right to vote, and we all deserve to be educated on issues. I think a big issue with our system now is the way our education exists. So as many know, you know, our education system, our public education system for that matter, is predicated on the surrounding wealth of the community. And when you have a history of America that comes from slavery, where people were denied the right to any type of intellectual or social mobility or economic mobility, you have already a segregated communities in which people are unable to have good educational systems because they have poor surrounding communities, and then we expect there to be equality in education. So we have, you know, different disparities like that that are affected by all of those core principles that I believe that if we worked hard to serve those individual, those intrinsic values that we should have, it would strengthen our community, it would strengthen our belief that in humanity we have a stake, and not just people in America, but people in Africa, people in China, people wherever people are. And that would help serve our greater purpose of liberation for mankind and our wish for a community and a collective purpose and effort for human freedom, equality, liberation, education, and democracy.
Great.